Diego.
Good evening. My name is Lance, and I'm an alcoholic. And thanks to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I no longer suffer from the disease of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, drugs are also part of my story. Don't be discouraged. I did those alcoholically as well. You know, I'd like to congratulate Mark on 90 days, and I'd like to welcome the newcomers. You know, I hope your last year, months, weeks were full of pain and misery, because with that pain and misery comes the gift of desperation, and with desperation comes a willingness to do what's suggested in these rooms. So anyway, my sobriety date is April 20th of 2010. 420 probably wouldn't have been my choice, but that was given to me by the San Diego Sheriff's Department. And for that, I'm very thankful. Anyway, I have a sponsor. My home group is Coronado Speaker Meeting. That's on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. over in Coronado. And in a general way, I'm going to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So growing up as a kid, I hated alcoholism. You know, by the time I was 7 years old, my parents divorced. My mom was an alcoholic. She found someone that drank just like her, if not worse. So alcohol devastated my family life, you know, my childhood. You know, there was many nights where they're screaming and fighting, or they're partying and music's going on. It's 2-3 in the morning. I have school the next day. You know, just real dysfunctional. Nights where my mom would come in my bedroom crying and telling me how bad of a mom she was and this and that. And, you know, the way that my parents drank, they kind of made this little pact together that no matter what happened when they were drinking, they left it at that. Kind of like that, if it happened in Vegas, it stays in Vegas, but with alcohol, you know. So that's not why I'm an alcoholic, you know, but it sure set a bad example of what I would later on see as acceptable behavior when it comes to alcohol, you know, and my behaviors. So the first time I drank, I was 11 years old, you know, and as a kid, you know, I always wanted to impress everybody, you know. You know, you hear about a lot of people saying, and they were awkward, they didn't feel comfortable in their own skin. I didn't have that kind of feeling. You know, I was a little shy, but I was always caring about what everybody else thought. You know, if I had $20, I wanted to tell you I had $40. If you had a story, I had to have a story that was better than yours. Or if you had this, I had this, you know, something better. You know, so I was always just trying to prove myself to everybody. So my first time I drank, it was more that kind of situation. I'm in front of the roller skating ring, and, you know, this was in 1986, and skating was a big deal. And I'm in this trailer park with my sister and her boyfriend, and they decide to bring out the alcohol, and the bottle comes my way, and, you know, and I'm just gunk, 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 and it's burning like hell, and I'm, like, just trying to impress everybody, so I'm just trying to ignore it. The next thing I know, it comes around again, and I'm feeling it, and I'm just gunk, 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 and everybody's eyes are big. My sister, slow down, slow down. You know, the next thing I know, I'm in front of the roller skating rink. My pants are down to my ankles. I'm yelling, hump me, you know. I don't say hump me out of respect for the meeting. I say it because when you're 11 years old, that's the kind of language you use. So I found out that day I wasn't very shy when it comes, you know, once I was drinking. But it was a pretty scary first drunk, you know. I don't know how I got home. I was stumbling. All I seen was lights blurring. I walked through my door. I tripped over the step. I bit through my lip. My sister's worried that my mom's coming home. She's trying to make me some soup. She poured that on my stomach, so I had blisters on my stomach. The next day, my head's pounding, and it just reiterated that same fact. Man, I hate alcohol. You know, most people, they have that first drink. They're like, whoa, I had it, and it was on. Man, I overshot it. And, you know, for the next couple of years, I didn't drink. You know, but by the time I was in high school, there I am trying to impress everybody again. And I found out, you know, then that, you know, that phenomenon of craving. Once I start drinking alcohol, I don't have a shutoff button, you know. I'm going to drink until I pass out. And most times that I drank, you know, I passed out. By the time I was a senior in high school, I realized that I'm not drinking like everybody else, you know. Before I'm going to a keg party, every one of my pockets is filled with a bottle or a can, and I'm drinking all of your alcohol and making sure that I have my little security blanket, you know, left behind, you know. Just for further qualification, you know. I've peed in closets, off stairways, on dining room chairs. I've woken up in beds, places that I had no idea where I've got to. I've gotten DUIs, you know. I drove more times drunk than I didn't, you know. I was a complete liability, you know, just a reckless drunk. And I justified that behavior. I justified that behavior the same way my parents justified that behavior. Hey, it happened when I was drunk. I wouldn't do that when I was sober, so that's how I justify it. You know, I'm either trying to fight you or I'm trying to screw you. You know, that's just the kind of behaviors that I had. And I didn't know how to learn from them because I was never accountable for them. So let's fast forward, you know, 2 weeks, 2 weeks before I got sober, you know, that moment of clarity. You know, I'm sitting in my room. I got thousands of dollars in my pockets. I got a big pile of mixed drinks on the table, you know. I'm spinning this little apparatus from 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock back and forth. And I got tears running down my face. You know, I just felt that spiritual emptiness, you know, that you hear about in these rooms. You know, just that last chance, man. I knew I was dying, you know. I went in the house and I told my family, I said, hey, I need to do something, you know. And you know, thankfully, 2 weeks later, you know, by the divine intervention of God, you know, in the form of a San Diego sheriff's deputy, you know, I'm walking down the street just minding my own business, and there he comes walking up. I had a quarter ounce of mixed drinks on me, and it ended up right in the back of a police car, you know, and you'll hear this one as well, man. I got in the back of that car, and there was that big breath let out, just like, whew, I knew that my game was over, you know. I knew I didn't have much more in me. So by the time I was in jail, I had already gotten my sentence, and I just told the judge, I said, hey, I could sit in here, but I'm going to go right back out doing the same thing. And, you know, he afforded me the opportunity to go to a recovery center. So my sobriety started with the Salvation Army, you know, and that place saved my life, man. When I got there, I just knew that I needed to be honest. I hadn't been honest in so long, I knew that was my number one thing, man. I was going to be honest, you know. I know that those places don't keep somebody sober, but they introduce us to these programs, you know, that give me a safe place to get myself sober. But I needed everything. I needed to be told how to work again. I needed the individual counseling. I needed the group counseling. I needed the chemical dependency class. I needed all that. I needed the chapel, you know. I needed to reestablish a relationship with God of my understanding, you know. So, you know, with that desperation, I was willing, you know, and relapse isn't a part of my story, you know. I've been sober ever since that day that I walked in. I knew that my day was over. So that's why I tell the newcomer, man, I hope that you have a lot of pain and misery, you know, so you get that desperation and you're willing to do what it takes, because you're going to find a life in here, you know, that's worth living. You know, I've given back ever since the time that I've gotten sober. You know, my plan going in was I got introduced to this program. I'm going to do 6 months. I'm going to give 6 months back, you know, and here I am 7.5 years later still giving back, you know. And I'd like to say also that when I got into this program, you know, I had a lot on my plate. I had a lot of baggage in the past. I had 3 felonies on my record. I owed $30,000 in child support, $15,000 in fines. And I thought to myself, man, how am I ever going to have a normal life again? You know, how am I ever going to get my fresh start that I, you know, I see everybody having? But it took me 5 years in sobriety, you know, just buckling down, making that money, going and paying revenue and recovery, and getting things done, you know. But after 5 years, you know, I don't owe child support. I don't owe any court fines. I have my license back. 2 of my felonies I got completely stricken from my record. The other felony I got reduced to a misdemeanor. So, you know, I'm employable. I have a job today. You know, I'm a full-time caregiver to my great uncle, and I have my name on all his bank accounts, on my grandmother's bank accounts. That ain't something a guy like me, you know, has 7.5 years ago, and I owe that to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm very, very thankful for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Man, I've met some great friends in here, and that's all I hang around with is people that are in sobriety, you know. And I want to tell the newcomer also, man, find something that you enjoy doing, you know. to fill that hole that your alcoholism took, you know, because you got to have fun, you know, or otherwise what's the point? I go out, I do things all the time, and I have a great time. And I thank you all for being a part of my sobriety. Thanks.